Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library.
No mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison.
Well, it's lovely to be back in the studio with you. And on today's show, we're going to talk about what we've been reading and what's on our to-be-read lists. And then we've got one or two hot tips that we'll share.
So awesome.
Would you like to start, Inika?
Sure, yep, I'll kick us off. Well, in honour of the news this week that Victoria has finally been let out of lockdown after such a long time.
Yes.
So whoop, whoop for Victoria.
Haven't they had a long... hard road.
That's right. Yeah. We think we have, but far out. Our neighbours across the ditch have really been doing it tough. So I'm going to lead off with a debut novel from a Victorian author, and this novel is set in Victoria. It's won a Victorian Premier's Award, and it's by an author called Victoria. So how's that for a mega title?
Oh, yeah, we've got to do it, don't we?
So this is a debut novel by Victoria Hannon, and it's called Kokomo, published just this year, maybe a couple of months ago now. And it's available in our adult fiction collection. Not available on ebook yet, but, you know, keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, hopefully
sure
it will.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll jump the ditch there. So our main character is young Melburnian Mina and her mother Elaine, who's been a recluse since Mina's dad's sudden death. And also in the mix are their neighbours and close friends, the Chings, who live just next door. When we meet her, Mina's in London. She's been living there for about five or six years, and she's a successful copywriter, and she's just starting a promising relationship with her charming colleague. Now, out of the blue, she gets a call from her best friend, Kira Cheng, who is also her neighbour, or was her neighbour when they were growing up. Elaine has been spotted outside of her house for the first time in 12 years.
Yeah.
So Mina takes this as a sign that she really needs to head home. So she jumps on the next plane home, and when she gets there, she finds out that really her mum's still pretty much a closed book to all intents and purposes. She hasn't been sent out of the house again since this sighting. And she's kind of sliding back into her old life, and her best friends are supportive and caring of Mina and her journey, but they've also got their own past going on. So Mina's a really strong young woman. When she was 20, she had to become the sudden sole carer for her mum because her mum went into a kind of a deep depression when her father died. And at the same time, she was having to get her own adult life started with lots of help from the Chings, who supported both of them. So they're really like second family to Mina and her mum. And Mina's managed to build an independent life for herself overseas in London. But when she's thrown back into the life that she left really in a hurry 7 years ago, she finds herself at a crossroads, and she has to really look closely at her past so that she and her mother can really move forward with both their lives. It's a story of grieving, really, but actually they bind it up in a series of love stories. So you've got this love between the daughter Mina and her mum Elaine, between their little family and the bigger family down the road, the Chings, and also this kind of bittersweet ode to going back to your hometown and slotting back into the position and seeing how you fit back in again.
I guess lots of people would relate to that, especially the influx of people who are coming home
Absolutely.
At the moment.
Absolutely. I think you're so right. It's actually a really good story for these times. You know, lots of people will be settling back in and just seeing what life is like back in their birthplace. Now, Mina's a really engaging lead. She's trying to balance all the plates of her life and to find a new path. And later in the book, Mother Elaine gets to tell her own really poignant story, and that reveals some of the finer detail behind her breakdown and why she hasn't left the house for so long. So for a little while there, you've got sort of this quite blank wall with Elaine, but later on you get get her story, and also Mina gets a greater appreciation for her mum and the kind of complexities of her life as well.
So it sort of really sounds as though it's a quite a slow reveal in a way, is it?
Yeah, it is. Mostly you're getting it from Mina's side for quite a while, but I say probably a quarter of the way before the end, you get the section from Elaine, and that really opens the whole book up. And opens up that relationship between the two, and also relationships that Elaine's had in her past as well with her husband and others. I really, really enjoyed this book. It does throw you straight into the picture, and it keeps you there with lots of sharply observed scenes and some dry humour and heaps of empathy for all the characters in the book. It keeps those aces up its sleeve until the end, so you'll be compelled to keep reading and to find out what's going to happen. It also really made me long for Melbourne. You know, I've had a few jaunts over the years. You know, the trams, they had party scenes and, you know, those great pubs they have over there.
It's a fantastic city, isn't it?
Oh, great city to visit.
Yeah.
You know, great city to live in usual times, I would say.
Yes, yeah. I imagine it would be. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm highly recommending this book. This is Kokomo by Victoria Hannan. I think she's really an author to watch. Mm. Like I said, she won an award for this book. It was an award for an unpublished manuscript, so she's had it published off the back of this award. Oh. And I'll just say this, don't be put off by the penis description on the first page. If you know, you know. Just work your way through that.
Oh, okay.
Keep going. It's totally worth it.
I almost don't know what... I'm lost for words. I was going to say it's not really my specialist subject, but it's sort of... now I want to read it.
Well,
Yeah, so that sounds fantastic. And thanks for alerting me to this book, because I must admit, to my shame, I hadn't come across it. So.
Yeah, I think I spotted it on the spin-off website.
Oh, and, of course, because they're so good, aren't they?
So good, yes. And so I jumped on, and yeah, they talked about the penis too. So
For some reason,
that was compelling to me.
Yeah, well, we're in good company, aren't we? Oh, that's wonderful. Well, look, it's probably from that I could segue, I guess.
Sure.
Into a book that this was quite a hard read in a lot of ways. So, and it's the book that's recently, it came out about a year ago, actually, at the height of the stories about the Me Too movement. And it's by the investigative journalist Ronan Farrow, and it's called Catch and Kill, Lies, Spies and a Conspiracy to Protect Predators. So, that was a bit of a mouthful of a title. Yeah, so it... So Ronan Farrow was writing for the New Yorker publication, very well-respected publication, and he did a lot of investigations into the stories about Harvey Weinstein. And he's a really courageous journalist. So he's won a lot of awards for his journalism. Now, it kind of is relevant to the book that he's the son of the actress Mia Farrow and film director Woody Allen. And there will be, some of our listeners will be old enough to know that there's a huge history. There's a backstory of very... how would you put it, unusual behaviours.
Absolutely. It's a convoluted story, isn't it?
Yes, And so somehow he's survived that, all of that dysfunction, and he's made a real life for himself, and he has his own partner and family now, and it functions, it would seem, quite well. But he's such a good journalist.
Mm.
So I really admire him. Now, so Ronan Farrow, in this book, he exposes the decades-long culture of, you know, they have that term, the casting couch. It's an awful concept, isn't it? And it's been used forever by powerful people in TV, film, all the media industries, and really in politics as well, isn't it? So now he's a meticulous researcher, which, you know, you've got to grant him that. The book is very dense, I must admit, but it's absolutely eye-watering in the way that he describes the lengths that these powerful figures in Hollywood would go to pressure news networks to basically kill stories.
Wow.
So, and when I talk about news networks, I'm meaning, you know, the ones like NBC that are sort of highly regarded. And so then this is where this phrase comes, and because the book's called Catch and Kill, and I didn't really know what that meant. I thought it was like a fishing term or something.
Like a trap thing.
Yeah. But it's a covert technique that's used by powerful figures. And what they do, they set up sort of a disreputable media company, and then this media company will purchase a story, a damaging story, and then they kill it. So they bury the story.
Wow.
So I never knew anything about
this. No, so what, exclusive rights to kind of publish or get rid of it?
Yes.
Right, so purge.
Yeah, and then they would bury them.
Wow.
So there's a whole, there's graveyards of these stories that would probably make our hair stand up.
Wow. And, you know, the X-Files.
Yeah, it is really. Mm. And of all these people, it should probably be in prison as well.
Okay,
so he took huge personal risks to get the story out. He was threatened with all sorts of repercussions. A lot of it was emotional blackmail about his own family story.
Right.
So I suppose you counter that by having to be really honest and upfront about your story.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was also physically threatened as well. So I'm actually surprised that he's still alive, to be honest.
Gosh.
But he really is a brave truth teller. And if you look at the index, it's full of names like Clinton, Cosby, Trump, Thatcher, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know, I reckon there'll be many, many people, powerful people, who wish this book had never been published.
All the more reason to publish, right?
Yes, and all the more reason for libraries to have it in their collection. I think it should be in every library. Now, it's highly recommended, but, you know, it's not an easy read at all. But it's an important one.
Yeah, well, I can add another one to that pile. Earlier in the year, I read a similar story by New York Times reporters Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey.
Oh, yes, yeah, that's right.
Called, she said, breaking the sexual harassment story that helped ignite a movement, and that was really about their work to uncover Harvey Weinstein in particular, and again, all those structures around him that hid what he was doing for so long. Also published in 2019, and I have a funny feeling these two were in a bit of a race to, maybe not to publish, but in terms of, they were in conversation in terms of publishing those big stories in the papers.
Yes,
yeah,
that would be right. And I've got a feeling that they appear in his index as well.
I think Ronan appears in this one too. So the pair together, you'll get a really good overview of that situation.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Wow. Well, then, after I read that, is it okay if I go to my next? I feel as though I'm being a bit,
absolutely, please
being a bit selfish, taking all the real estate.
No, go for it.
But so I will. so after I read that, I was pretty exhausted. So I felt as though I needed something that was a bit of a light-hearted, or something to counterpoint that effort. And I discovered a fairly new book. It's just been published this year. And it's called That Left Turn at Albuquerque by Scott Phillips. So it's adult fiction, but it's also available as an Overdrive e-book.
Cool.
Now, I loved this. It was really fun. Now, it's noir crime fiction. And so it's got all those elements where it's bleak and kind of grimy. But, you know, it's surprisingly upbeat. So I was thinking of making a genre like joie noir or something.
Joie noir.
Yeah. So it's set in California, outside of the main centres, so a bit small towny. And the main character is a bankrupt lawyer, and his name is Rigby, and he's just lost his last $200,000, as you do, into a cocaine deal that's gone terribly wrong. And the lesson that he takes from that, rightly or wrongly, is never trust anyone else with your dirty work.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, that's true. And as my dad used to say, if you want something done properly, you do it yourself. That usually when I, if I was sweeping the path or something, you know. So, but anyway, that's his lesson. So he's desperate to get back on top of things, and he formulates an elaborate art forgery scheme, and he justifies it by saying, look, it's a victimless crime.
Debatable.
Is there such a thing as a victimless crime? But anyway, he thinks this is fine. But in order to pull off this huge art forgery, he's got to negotiate with this whole cast of players, and they've all got their own agendas. And so he's got his wife, his lover, his ex-mistress, his other lover, the embittered art forger, resentful nurses, money-hungry relatives, you know, the whole thing. And all it's going to take is one misstep and the whole thing falls apart. You know? So will he be able to save anything? And everything that can go wrong does go wrong. But I really enjoyed this because I enjoy a good noir thriller. Because usually in these, the main characters or the anti-heroes, they've had their values eroded somehow. And but I think that makes them interesting to the reader.
Yeah.
So, and so the lawyer, Rigby, the main character, he's lost all his values due to his own bad behaviour, really.
Right.
And bad luck, too.
So then they're finally, the rubber hits the road and
yes,
they've got to deal with it.
Yeah. But these are sort of good when you compare them to, you know, the other kind of crime thrillers where the good man with the gun comes in and saves everyone.
Sure.
It's quite different to that, but a fun read, so I'd recommend
it. Sounds really good, yeah. I do like a bit of art forgery, actually. There's quite a few books that bring art forgery into them, don't they, now?
Very interesting, yeah.
Oh, that sounds like a good read.
Yeah. So, anyway, the moral of the story, crime doesn't pay, so whatever you do, don't try it at home.
I'll take that away with me into my weekend.
Yeah.
Well, my next read on my list, now I read this at the beginning of October, but because we've had a little bit of a break, I'll bring it up now. So I'm jumping back across the ditch from Melbourne to Wellington with a brief foray up to Auckland for my next read. My next read today is A Mistake by Carl Schurker, a New Zealand author. This is, I think, a debut novel, I'm pretty sure, and published last year, so 2019, and available in the Adult Fiction Collection. Now, you may have heard of this one. It's really compelling read. This is a sort of a medical drama and ethical book.
Oh, right.
The main character is Elizabeth Taylor. Don't ask me why he named her Elizabeth Taylor. It gets mentioned in the book, and I was thinking, why do you bother?
Why
do you bother? Give her some other name.
Yes.
Anyway, she's called Elizabeth Taylor, and she's a high-ranking surgeon in a Wellington public hospital. Now, when we meet her in the book, she's leading an emergency operation on a young woman who has come in with stomach complaints, and it turns out that she's got some sort of blood poisoning, so she needs emergency surgery. Now, the surgery appears to have been successful, but then the patient dies unexpectedly overnight in the sort of post-op ward. Now, Elizabeth is convinced that the death was unavoidable and it's nothing to do with the work that she did. But the woman's parents want an investigation and they get one. So the case becomes opened by the hospital, and it's all happening under this kind of premise that there's a general call from the public and the government for greater transparency around surgical outcomes. And they've proposed a policy, which is up for consultation, around having a publicly available league table of individual surgeons' successes, failure rates, mortality rates for their patients. And this is sort of conversations going on in the public at the same time as, you know, public health spending funding is being squeezed, and, you know, the workload of the surgeons who are working in the public sector is really piling up, and the pressure is too. So, really interesting premise. Elizabeth's really an interesting character. So she's obviously working in a highly male-dominated field, which has got quite a high level of machismo and sort of power going that surgery. She's managed to develop a very thick skin and really quite a tough exterior to sort of protect herself and to grow her own career and rise up the ranks. She listens to heavy metal when she operates to kind of as a white noise behind her work. She's renovated her own home from floor to ceiling from grassroots, and she's having a couple of quiet affairs on the side with colleagues of both sexes at various levels in the institution that she's in. So her case, this case really rocks her professionally and personally, and it means that she's got these cracks kind of appearing in this carefully constructed life that she's made for herself, where she thought she was pretty much untouchable, I guess.
Wow, it sounds fascinating.
It's really, really interesting. I'm not usually one for medical dramas on television, but I'm thinking maybe I could actually, this book has convinced me that maybe I can take it on in literary form. I managed to make it through the opening sequence, which was a detailed, very detailed description of the operation. Carl Shuker himself writes for the British Medical Journal. He's an established medical professional. So, you know, he's speaking from experience.
He knows what he's talking about.
There's lots of detail there. It moves on with the plot and the character development really quickly from that operation onwards, covering about maybe a week to 10 days. I don't have the book on me, so I can't quite check that. Over just 184 pages, so a really short book. Near the end, it leaps up country to a night out in Auckland, which, becomes a real turning point in the book, and it ends with a real screech and a lurch to the finish. So as I said, it covers both medical and personal responsibility and ethics, looks at power dynamics and sexism in the workplace, and that pressure of working in the public eye and for the public purse, really. You'll whiz through this if you pick it up, and you'll definitely want to go back for a reread almost instantly. And because it's so short, you might well be able to reread it in your 4 weeks. There's plenty of copies out there, so pick one up today.
Think I will. You know, it does sound really good. And it sounds as though it's really a story for our time, doesn't it?
Because
there's so much more transparency or a desire for transparency in our hospital systems.
It definitely got me thinking, and I could definitely see this as a mini-series or something. I reckon it'll be optioned.
Interesting. And probably it sounds as though it would have more depth than, say, Grey's Anatomy or something.
Yeah, I can't say. I was never really a Grey's fan. Like I said, I don't like the blood. I think that was more about the drama-rama, wasn't it?
It was more about the romances, I think. Oh, wow, interesting. Hey, now, speaking of romance, well, it's kind of romance, this book. I've just started it, so it's kind of on my to-be-read list, but kind of not. So I've got one foot into this book, and it's great. It's called Polar Vortex, and it's by a writer called Shani Mutu, published this year. Now, so I only started reading it yesterday, but I've romped through about 60 pages already, that's a lot for me. But I can tell you that Polar Vortex, it's just exquisite. Now, Shani Mutu is an amazing author. She's a visual artist and also a fiction writer. Mm-hmm. Now, she was born in Dublin, Ireland, but her parents were from Trinidad. And so she has grown up in Trinidad, and then the family relocated to Canada when she was about 19, I think. So she now resides in Canada and has done so for a number of decades. But so the book is a domestic drama, and it deals with the complexities of modern day life and modern day relationships. Now, Inika, knowing me, you'll know that this is my absolute fave kind of book.
Absolutely. up your alley.
I do love a good domestic drama. I like to read about it, actually. I prefer not to be involved in one. But the story follows a lesbian couple called Priya and Alex. They leave the big city and move to the countryside in search of a more peaceful life. So everything's sort of idyllic in their relationship until an old friend of Priya's tracks her down via social media, as you do, I guess. And this friend called Prakash, he's a man, and he was once very close to Priya, and but it was a largely platonic relationship. But so I'm kind of up to this part of the book, but I know that secrets, lies and agendas are going to emerge. But it's the writing is absolutely divine, and the characterisation, the sense of place.
Fantastic. Ooh,
it's one that you really want to savour. So I can't wait to get back into it.
Sounds really good.
But it's a good one. Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Well, I've got the next one on my TBR list. It's an older book. Well, I say older. It's from 2017. And it is a collection of personal essays. And it's by Samantha Irby. And it's called We Are Never Meeting in Real Life. You can find it in the adult nonfiction section, and it's an ebook on Overdrive. Samantha Irby is an African-American comedian, blogger and writer. I don't actually know a lot about this, but it was, as I say, published in 2017, and it's still really popular, so that's always a really good
sign.
Yeah,
that's a good sign, isn't
it? Yeah, and she's friends with Roxane Gay and Lindy West, and they're both really honest and unapologetic writers, so I think this one is going to be right up my alley. So you could check this one out, or you could check out the more recent one, Wow, No Thank You, as well, and give it a go.
Oh, that sounds great. And, of course, if you're friends with Roxane Gay and Lindy, you know, well, you're going to be pretty good, aren't you?
Oh, I think so. Yes. I think so. Yeah, I was waiting a while for this, so I'm looking forward to getting into it.
Excellent. So I think we've got time for a hot tip. What are we saying now? Because libraries, we're back kind of into full gear, aren't we, with our programs and our events?
Yeah, that's right. And we've even got lots of exhibitions happening over the neighbourhood as well. So maybe our hot tip today will be to take a trip into the city and come and see two new exhibitions at the Central City Library. So we have on the ground floor of the Central Library right now, or starting on the 9th of November, we have Mapura Studios. They'll be taking up space in the library from the 9th of November to the 30th. They offer lots of art classes and art therapy programs in the city and around Auckland. So, yeah, check out Mapura Studios' website and come and see us in the city to visit that one. And then take a trip up to Level 2 Central Library. We've got a heritage collection exhibition called Food for Thought. And that recognises the role that food plays in family, belonging and culture, with stories of Auckland life from the kitchen table to the restaurants. And it features menus, photographs and ephemera from the Auckland Library's Heritage Collection. And that one is running until the end of January. So come and see us, see both exhibitions, and then be inspired to go and check out all the great restaurants and cafes in the area too.
Yeah, that one does look so interesting. And all that ephemera with the menus and stuff, you see how restaurants have changed.
Absolutely. Didn't it used to be a buttered piece of white bread next to your chow mein?
And or your chicken in a basket. That was the height of fashion, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah, so, and prawn cocktails. So,
of course.
Yes, oh, my mouth's watering. yeah, so look, that sounds great. But yeah, great things to do. And come in and see the staff and
check us out, check out the displays.
Sounds good. Well, look, to our listeners, thanks so much for tuning in today. This has been good. I know I've got lots that I still need to read. So take care of yourselves and be kind to each other, but most of all to yourselves. So thanks for listening. Haere rā and ka kite anō.
Brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.